Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times. This week's Bulldog is Science Facilitator and Department Chair Laura Schoenfeld. This semester, Laura is teaching Chemistry, Chemistry Honors, and AP Chemistry. In our conversation, Laura shares about her unconventional path into teaching and why teaching is such a good fit for her. She shares some of her learnings in supporting students and not taking everything too seriously. Thanks again for tuning into this week's episode of Who's Behind the Bulldog. Laura Schoenfeld, thank you so much for joining me today for this little podcast, Who's Behind the Bulldog?
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited.
Oh, good. I'm excited. I'm excited to learn more about you. Laura, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what brought you into education.
Okay, well, I am a Colorado native. I just finished, or this is my currently my fourth year of teaching. However, I have been at Arvada for 5 years because I student taught here. So I student taught and then I sort of just never left, that's cool. Let's see, what else? I'm very outdoorsy. I'm into rock climbing. I'm trying to do whitewater kayaking, but I'm really horrible at it. I snowboard. I purchased a backcountry snowboard so I can ski up a mountain and snowboard down. I don't know. I just like doing stuff all the time. So how did I get into education? This is a really convoluted story because I never wanted to be a teacher and I've never liked children. I've tried to avoid children the majority of my life. And so when I decided to be a teacher, everyone was like, whoa, buddy. When I got out of high school, I went to the Colorado School of Mines to be a chemical engineer because from a really young age, I had known that I wanted to be a chemist. And when I was younger, I always had it in the back of my mind that I was going to be a cosmetic chemist. I wanted to design makeup. I wanted to design lotions, whatever, because I like the aspect that you can take something that's like societally known as girly, like makeup is girly. So I wanted to take something girly and put the science behind it, because there's really a lot of chemistry in makeup. So I wanted to be a cosmetic chemist. So I went to mines for 2 years to get a chemical engineering degree. And I was like, this sucks. This is not where I was meant to be. But I learned a lot. I had a lot of valuable experiences. And so then my junior year, I transferred to CU Boulder. And I ended up getting my bachelor's in chemistry. And that was pretty cool. However, the issue was that because like transferred schools, I never had time to study abroad, which was my life goal. So after I graduated, I sent my parents, I told them, I'm going abroad. I'm going to go teach English, which is weird again, because I didn't really like kids. But I was like, I'm going to go teach English. Here are three programs. Pick one. It doesn't matter which one you pick, because I'm going regardless. So the one I gave them, I ended up in Nicaragua. I was the third participant ever in this program. I lived with a family. Sometimes we had running water. Sometimes we didn't. Sometimes there was electricity. Sometimes there wasn't. I ate rice and beans every day for months, and I loved it. And it was truly a valuable experience. I had my own classes with middle school kids, and I taught them like basic English words and basic English vocabulary, but it was just it was awesome. It was fun. So then when I came back to Colorado, because my parents, although I thought I was an adult, my parents said, you have to come back. So I came back home and I got a job in Cincinnati as a chemist at Procter & Gamble. And I quickly learned that I was not a Midwesterner. I'm too liberal and I'm too outspoken, and I just could not, Cincinnati was not my thing. So I came back to Colorado. However, there's not particularly a lot of chemistry jobs in Colorado. And although I had always wanted to be a cosmetic chemist, I didn't really have the drive at that point to go back to like chemistry school. Like I just didn't really think I was smart enough. And so then someone suggested to me, maybe you should go be a teacher. And I was like, I don't like kids. I don't want to be a teacher. And then I sort of just started thinking about it. And it once I like made the commitment to be a teacher, everything just fell into place. I applied to CU Denver and I got in. I had a full scholarship to go back to be a teacher. Through that, I have a noise scholarship, so I got 30,000 to be a teacher. Then through that, I was able to apply through for a variety of other programs. I went and I lived in the biosphere in Arizona for 2 months and did soil research. The second I decided to be a teacher, everything started rolling perfectly. It was insane because when I was trying to be a chemist, nothing worked. Nothing worked. So then when I so fine so at 25, after everything, I went back to be a teacher. The end.
So how has your experience been at Arvada? Has that just continued to sort of reaffirm this sort of like unexpected calling, if you will?
So my first year teaching here was definitely the toughest, just because I didn't really know what I was doing, and it's a huge learning experience. But what's interesting is every year at Arvada has been different. Like I haven't done the same thing at Arvada. Like I do similar things every year, but every year is a brand new year, and every year the standards are changing. We've transitioned to like a PBL school, so my projects have changed. Everything has changed. But yes, I've continued to grow.
What are some of your favorite things that you've implemented and done in your time here so far?
Well, I okay, this is mainly in response to Jason Ziegler, but one thing we do in science is we light a lot of things on fire. And the point of it is to get kids involved and to get kids excited about science and about chemistry, because we're not just lighting stuff on fire. Way better than math. We are like figuring out why things are being lit on fire, why things are lighting on fire. We calculate how many grams of something we need. Or so I think one of my favorite things is just doing demos and demonstrations as much as I can. Science just decided, or chemistry just decided, that we are going to do a different demo every single week to get the kids involved. And they seem to be liking it. It's cool.
You seem to have lots of different tools under your belt to help engage students besides just the demos. What are some of your favorite go-to strategies that kind of bring learning to life and keep those kids involved and engaged and excited about science?
So one thing that I really struggled with when Arvada became a PBL school is no one would help me. I was like, I need help designing chemistry PBLs. I need help. I need help. And I think people just avoided helping because they didn't know what to do either. And like when I was in high school, it was a very traditional, you'll learn this. Like it was, so last year I took a step back and I was like, there's so many things in chemistry that students just straight up don't need to know. It's not important for what we're doing. It's not important for where the kids are going. And I really wanted chemistry to be more of an experiential process. A few summers ago, when I was in Spain, I met this dude. He was our tour guide from Italy. And this guy from Italy told me that he remembered when he was in high school chemistry, he did this test where they made fire turn different colors. That's the flame test, and that's the same test we do in my classroom. And so what I started really thinking about is it doesn't really matter what we do, like in the sense of kids are going to remember the experience of doing it, and they're going to remember the activities that go along with it. So even if I leave out certain parts, the kids are going to get more from actually doing the labs, actually participating, actually by lighting something on fire, within moderation. And it's that experimental learning that will really help the kids grow. So like every unit, every lesson I do, I try to somehow connect it back to, look, you already know this thing about chemistry in your own world. We're just looking at it from a new lens. So like when I was in high school, it was very hard to see the application of chemistry. So that's my biggest thing, application.
Any specific examples of labs or activities or projects or anything that you find to be most successful for you?
Well, so I mean, that's hard because like every year has been different. So there's many labs and projects that I've not done consecutively. This last So I'm all okay. So I am in grad school again. I'm getting a master's in chemistry. So I have a master's in education, but I want to get a master's in chemistry and chemical education, and I'm going to finish that this summer. And so through that, I like made this project about rocks and minerals. And with my point of being that rocks, minerals, everything that we need, like everything on the planet is made from elements. So we looked at if you have a rock, what minerals are in the rock? What elements are in the rock, what atoms are, so, and it like just broke it down. And so I think that was really cool. We looked at crystals, the kids make crystals. We looked at different crystal shapes, and we just looked at these really basic phenomenons that they hadn't really thought about before. But anyway, my whole thesis was if I do a project, a real life project about rocks and minerals, it will help this, it'll engage the students because it's tangible. They can touch it, they can see it, they can feel it. And I thought that went pretty well. The kids produced a book, which was pretty neat.
Oh, that's
And yeah, I like that. I'd say that's probably my best favorite one right now.
I have to ask because you and I had a little conversation about your high school experience. You already mentioned in here that it was pretty traditional for the most part, but you were in a program that I think was doing some pretty cool things. Can you kind of share with the listeners a little bit about that program and maybe what was beneficial for you personally from it?
So I went to Legacy High School. It's in Broomfield, and I was part of this program called Legacy 2000. And this program, it was a math and science program. So I took, chemistry, I took physics, I took the same science classes. However, I did this additional class. And this additional class, what we essentially did was we would just design our own experiments. We were given some type of parameters, and it was like, okay, design your experiment. And we would start from scratch, and we'd design whatever we wanted to do. And then from there, we would make what we designed. So we would design it, we would make it, we would test it, and then at the very end, we would present it. So we would make a PowerPoint and present it. So when you're 16 or 15 in high school, it's so scary to present, and just by the time I was 16, I'd probably presented over 100 times in front of large groups of people. And it just makes it so easy to do, just the repetitive practice of it. But that really helped me a lot. And we would write papers. We could write papers on whatever we wanted. They were 2 pages long, and it had to relate back to science somehow. So I wrote papers on platypus. I wrote papers on why rappers wear metal grills on their teeth and what they're made out of. And like it didn't matter what you wrote it on, as long as you could relate it back to science. But it was a good program, and that's always why I thought I was going to be a chemist, because I was in that program.
You really developed your ability to be like kind of self-directed and own your learning.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
That's awesome. Say a little bit about your personal kind of take on equity, what that means to you and how you promote the most equitable education for all of your students.
I am really struggling with this right now during COVID. However, normally what I try to do is in the classroom, I try to sit down next to every single student every single day and individually check in with them. How are you? What are you doing? What questions do you have? What specific math problem, because chemistry, there is a lot of math, what specific math problem can like you and I do together? Like what part do you not understand? And I just sit down next to the kids and I give them the one-on-one attention that they need. Because often what I've noticed is kids know how to do what we're doing. It's not particularly difficult. It's mainly just looking at the same patterns happening over and over, but kids just panic. And so by me just sitting down next to them and reaffirming just what they're doing makes the biggest difference. And it's just that confidence boost. So I just try to boost their confidence and sit and listen. And I want them all to feel heard.
You're pretty natural at building those relationships with those students and keeping a high bar. I think, there's this unique talent and balance that you have to be able to do both of those things well. Do you have any tips for any people out there?
Don't care as much and have fun. Like I say ridiculous things all the time, but I think that's okay. Today I had my kids argue about if cereal is soup, and they're all very upset with this. So, but it's just like taking a step back and having fun and being silly, but being making, you know, it's, if we can have fun while we're learning science, everyone is learns more. Make fun of yourself, make fun of other people, whatever. Make fun of me, it doesn't matter. And let's just have fun. So.
I think you modeled that a little bit too a couple of Fridays ago when you shared some of your expertise in using Pear Deck and quizzes, sorry. Some of that personality kind of shone through and like not taking things quite so seriously the whole time. Anything that you want to speak of to our listeners about things that you found do work really well for you with remote learning? And by the way, listeners, if you haven't checked out that little section, please check out the video because really good strategies are embedded in there. But sorry, back to your advice and strategies about remote learning.
Well, some strategies I use. I don't know. I use Pear Deck regularly every day. I start off with silly questions. I start off with how they're doing. We talk about cereal. I've been during remote learning, I do a lot of Edpuzzle. I want kids to be interactive. I want them to see videos. We're trying to do a demo a week. Remote learning is so tough. And the hardest part about remote learning for science is I want it to be hands-on for them. And that's really how I think the best way to learn science is by doing it hands-on. We have used a variety of different simulations to do so kids can help visualize what's actually happening on the molecular level. So I think it's just not doing the same activity over and over and over. I think that's my suggest, like what I try to do. It's my suggestion. Just every single day, make it different. And that in itself engages the kids. Because if you're bored, the kids are definitely bored. So every lesson I plan, I do something so I'm not bored in it. Because if I'm bored, they're bored.
That speaks to my heart. Like I always try to ask myself when I was a teacher, like, would I want to be in this class? And if my answer was like no, I would be like, scrap that, I'm doing something different then.
But at the same time, not everything's exciting all the time. Sometimes you have to sit down, you have to practice taking notes, you have to practice doing a test, and sometimes you have to be old school. And I think it's important to remember those values and those practices too. And because every day in class, it's like we're going to write something down, we're going to practice taking notes for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, because it's that muscle memory. So you need some, you really need a combination of both.
Yeah, like a balance, right?
A good balance.
Laura, any exciting things that are in the works, either in your classroom or your science department, that are coming down the pike either this year or next?
We are in the process of figuring out physical science. We're going to change it up a little bit next year. Joe Ventola had set up a grant and won to get a $100,000 garden out where the butterfly garden is. And so we are going to work with Emily Duncan to prepare, we're going to work with Emily Duncan to prepare a class that's just based around hydroponics and this whole garden outside. And so we're in the process of designing that. The next chemistry unit, we're going to pretend to be environmental scientists. We're going to look at the environment. We're going to, at the end of every school year, we tie-dye. Last year we did not, so we tie-dye. One project that I did 2 years ago, we didn't get to last year, is I had the kids make their own dye out of vegetables. And they had to experiment and decide which vegetables would make different colors of dye. And that was really cool. So that will come up again at the end of this school year. But I don't know, maybe just more surprises.
Fun stuff. I can't wait to see some of it and pop in. It's always super fun to be in your classroom and jump into some of the learning with the kids. It's always super engaging.
Thank you.
What has been Laura Schoenfeld's best failure?
You know, I think when I decided to become a teacher, that was a really hard decision. It was always assumed by my parents that I was going to be a scientist or, I don't know, something something sciencey, an engineer. You know, I really contemplated going to medical school for the longest time. And so it was always assumed that I was going to, I don't know, do something more hardcore sciencey. And so when I decided to go back and be a teacher, leaving the chemistry profession, that was my best failure because it was really hard. It was really emotional because I worked so hard to get into chemistry. However, it just wasn't what I wanted to do. So it was taking that step back and figuring out, well, I can take the fact that I really like chemistry and I can apply it to somewhere else in my life. And so it was like it like when I decided to be a teacher, it was a huge uproar in my family. And but really, I believe I've been quite successful. I feel successful with it. I feel like I'm way more successful as a teacher than I was as a chemist.
And so many students currently and in the future are going to benefit from that mistake, failure, quote unquote failure. Laura, what's your big advice for other educators out there?
I would don't take kids so seriously. Like, let them have fun. I think, like, I don't really have classroom management issues. And I think it's because I don't let certain things bother me. You know, if I let kids make fun of me, but and then I can return the making fun of, you know, in a grown up, you know, respectful way, excuse me. So I think it's having fun and letting the kids be kids and experiment and do things and talk to one another. So many times when I try to get my kids to talk about stuff in small groups, and they're like, "We're not allowed to talk in other classes." And I'm like, "What do you mean you can't talk in other classes?" So my piece of advice is let kids talk, but like guide what they're talking about. Let the kids do stuff, but you know, give them guidance. And I always demand high quality. If they're gonna turn in stuff like poor quality work, I sit down and I make them fix it. Oftentimes, I think kids that just don't do turn stuff in simply are too embarrassed to tell you they don't understand. So it's just like sitting down, having that one-on-one time and confirming that they know it.
You had a lot of really important components in that last advice there. I really agree. You know, like the more fun you can infuse in there into your classes, the more kids are gonna like respond both in an engagement way and also like that relational way, because they're gonna see you as a human and they're gonna feel like they can be humans and they can be comfortable. And it's just like creating that environment that you do so well that allows students to be themselves and be comfortable.
Yeah, and I really try to like say, you know, it's okay to feel dumb. I don't really care. Like if you don't feel dumb, you're not learning anything. You know, in middle school and prior in elementary school, you've hit on some biology topics before, so that's not anything particularly new. But a lot of chemistry is brand new for a lot of kids. And they want to be the best at it, but it's okay to take a step back. It's okay to feel dumb. It's okay to be like, I have no idea. Because we're taking, you know, a lot, we're taking hard science and we're taking hard math and we're crossing it. And that, when you take math out of the math room and you put it in the science classroom, everyone just panics. So it's having that patience to like say, it's okay to feel dumb. Who really cares? We're gonna get past this. You're gonna learn it, and then you're not gonna feel dumb. And building the kids up from there.
Yep, 100%. Gotta be vulnerable yourself. You have to let that be a safe space that if you do make a mistake or say something wrong, that people around you are not going to put you down for that and prevent you from learning from that, right? So.
And I make mistakes all the time, and then the kids point them out all the time, and I think that's okay. The other thing like that I do, so I'm trying to speak Spanish, and the one thing with that is I like my Spanish is not top notch, but it's okay. But with that, like I speak with many of the English language learners in Spanish, and I tease them that they're my Spanish teachers because they teach me and they help me and they teach me new vocabulary words and we practice. And so it's like I switch the whole dynamic on them by making them the teacher. And they're like, wow, I know more than the teacher. And then that empowers them. So it's somehow finding a way to empower the students to do what you want. Like empower them and then they'll do what you want.
Yeah, it's like in ways, I guess, a little bit of reverse psychology.
Yeah, I didn't really realize how much psychology was in teaching until I started teaching. But there's just, how do you manipulate people all day to want to learn? Yes. So,
Manipulate in the best way possible,
yeah,
the most
quite
positive way
possible.
possible.
So,
Oh, Laura, it's been great talking with you. It's been great learning a little bit more about you. Thank you for everything that you do. Kids really love you. They love your classes. It's pretty obvious why. So keep fighting the great fight, and thank you for your time.
Okay, well, thank you. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thank you all for tuning into today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog?